Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to this Africa Link Christmas edition. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn, Germany. To get us in the right Christmas mood, we've kicked off with the African Guitar Summit Band with their song Afia Pa, a greeting used in the festive season by the Twi people of Ghana. For many Christians, Christmas is not just a time for celebrating the birth of Jesus, but also remembering and helping the less fortunate in our society. In this Africa Link Christmas edition, we look back at the people who are changing the continent for the better. For much of this year, Europe's migration crisis has dominated the headlines. Hundreds of thousands of asylum seekers continue to make dangerous trips to reach Europe. A large number of them are from African countries like Eritrea and Somalia, but also Western African countries such as Senegal. Fanta Diallo, a 31-year-old Senegalese, has set up an organization to counter the migration trend in her own country. She hopes to convince her fellow citizens to stay in their country of birth and be productive. Heiko Flores with this report by Stefan Mull.
A place of opportunities. That's what Dakar is to Fanta Diallo. She believes there is a bright future for her country, and she wants to spread this confidence among her fellow citizens. That is why the 31-year-old founded Senegalese Dream, an organization that tries to convince young Africans hoping to find work in Europe to rather make Senegal their country of choice.
He's educated, unlike most young people in Senegal. But despite his education, he can't find a job. So what can you do? Emigrate? Lie down and sleep? Take on the whole world? No, you get up every morning and do what you can.
One such person is Fanta's neighbor, Buka, whom she helps to set up a coffee shop.
I put it all down on paper. I presented it to them, and they advised me to do this and not do that, that this would work out. They found a place for me.
Every month, thousands of young and educated Senegalese leave home to search for work abroad. Many risk their lives trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea by boat. According to the International Organization for Migration, between January and March this year alone, 1,200 Senegalese were among those who reached the shores of Italy. Senegalese Dream convinced Buka to stay, and it supported him in getting the official documentation and in drawing up a business plan. In schools all around the country, Fanta engages with the young generation. For her, entrepreneurship and agriculture are the answers to the job crisis. Even on weekends, scores of pupils come to listen to her.
People prefer sweeping the streets of Amsterdam, sweeping the streets of Berlin or Barcelona to working our own land because they think that is success. When they get back off the plane in Dakar, they wear fancy clothes. Their cousins carry their luggage, and they go on to marry the best-looking girl in the family because they made it to Europe. After a month, they are back in Berlin sweeping the streets.
Fanta's life story is her best example. Coming from a modest background, her family wanted her to work in France, but she went to university instead and got a scholarship with the German Konrad Adenauer Foundation. Eventually, she became a deputy mayor in Dakar. For her, education is key.
Fanta is my role model. I want to be like her once I finish school.
Mamadou Mokhtar does not share Fanta's vision. Despite having an education, he could not find employment in Senegal for years. Disillusioned, the 35-year-old took a boat and tried to leave, but the Spanish Coast Guard stopped him. He says he will try again, for the sake of his young son.
I want a brighter future for him. I don't want him to live like me. I don't think I can fulfill my dreams by staying here.
These are the stories Fanta faces every day, but the flight to Europe helps neither the country nor its people.
And that report was written by Stefan Mühl. As you've just heard, youth unemployment is one of the leading factors that push young people from Africa to migrate to Europe. As part of the solution, Tony Elumelu, a Nigerian businessman, came up with an entrepreneurial program. He says the project, which lends money to young entrepreneurs, could in turn create 1 million new jobs and contribute up to $10 billion in revenue across the continent. From Lagos, Sam Olukoya reports.
Tony Elumelu is the man behind the African dream of creating 1 million new jobs on the continent. He intends to do this through the Tony Elumelu Foundation Entrepreneurship Program. Why is he concerned about unemployment among African youths?
Demographic trends show that we need to create 10 million jobs a year to sustain Africa's young population. Governments and big corporates alone cannot provide the number of jobs to engage millions of our younger Africans entering the job market every year. But I believe that African entrepreneurs can and should.
Elumelu, through his foundation, has set aside $100 million to support 10,000 Africans with compelling business ideas. Viability of the business ideas and the passion and commitment shown by applicants are some of the criteria for choosing those who will receive funding. Successful candidates will receive two rounds of funding, each made up of $5,000. They are not required to pay back the first round, which they will receive to set up their business. Pamanda Vea, director of the Tony Elumelu Foundation Entrepreneurship Program, says the second round of $5,000 will have to be paid back.
We will provide them with a second round of $5,000 investment. And that will be structured more as a loan and as an equity. Not because we want to make it be difficult, but the reality of an entrepreneur is that they do have to talk about structured financing. They do have to understand what it is to take a loan and what is the responsibility and accountability in returning that loan. Right? So it's as much a teaching tool as much as an investment tool.
It is projected that the 10,000 Africans will in turn create 1 million jobs. Elumelu believes his dream is viable because he had in the past successfully run similar programs. Stanley Achonu, a beneficiary of one of the past programs, says the funding he and some young Nigerian colleagues got to develop an information technology company changed their fortune.
You know, they say miracles happen, and we consider that seed funding as a big miracle for us because it came at a very critical point when we're very down, as in at our lowest point, and we're, you know, probably going to close shop. So it helped us sustain, and it helped us to scale up. And today we have achieved more than, you know, we imagined at that early stage.
Encouraged by this kind of success, Elumelu decided to improve upon his job creation initiative to extend it beyond Nigeria and make it pan-African. Another remarkable improvement over past programs is that under the current program, those getting funding will be provided with mentors who will guide them on how to actualize their business ideas. The Tony Elumelu Initiative to support young African entrepreneurs will run over a 10-year period, with 1,000 successful applicants selected annually. The foundation has selected the first set of 1,000 beneficiaries.
DW Lagos correspondent Sam Olukoya. In July, DW launched Africa on the Move. This is a multimedia series documenting lives of ordinary Africans doing extraordinary things. Changemakers who use their skills and knowledge to move the continent forward. One man working behind the scenes for Africa on the Move is Thomas Mandelmeyer. He has been telling me what people think of the program so far.
Well, the response has been very good so far. The issues that we posted in social media or online, or the videos we showed on the TV news, the stories are very different. They're telling very different stories from very different countries and different people. We had a good response either from the program in Deutsche Welle, but also from production sites, say in Kampala or Dar es Salaam, who did the production for us. And they said, oh, this is a kind of storytelling we never had. So we learned something about doing other sorts of films, and we love the way we approach people. So these are the two responses I might tell you that Africa on the Move had so far.
And what about the people that you focus on in this story, the protagonists? How has telling their stories impacted their work?
I'm not sure whether their life has changed from telling their stories on different DW platforms and on TV. But what I can say is that, for instance, we had a response from someone in Ghana who saw a portrait on someone who did luxury shoes in Accra. And he was also into business in Accra. And he said, oh, what a lovely way to show the products, to show the business itself and the modern way Ghana is going right now. So he wanted us to do a video on his business. So there is, of course, a response when people from the countries seeing that we are reporting in this way, in a very storytelling way, on the people.
And what about you yourself? What has been your experience working for this project or with this project, Africa on the Move?
My experience was that we went much deeper into African society, away from the global scale of development and aid or bilateral or multilateral cooperation. Africa on the Move goes beyond and portrays people from different African countries, and those people are inspired and courageous, and they're motivated by themselves. So this is what fascinated me since the middle of the year. We produced almost 60 stories right now. I realized that Africa has much more potential out of the communities than maybe Europeans think of.
Can you tell me if you have any story out of these 60s that you've mentioned that really captured your imagination and your interest?
There are, of course. There is an African changemaker. He was from Cameroon and he was doing some movie screenings for blind people. And we saw him in the film trying to cross a street in Douala, Cameroon. And this picture stood for itself because it told us much more than any words how difficult it is for those handicapped people to live their lives in Africa. And on the other hand, we had a courageous young girl from South African school who fights with his schoolmates against crime and violence in their community. This girl is 15 years of age, and she's motivating so many people around her to fight this crime and to create a better world, a better community.
Project manager for DW's Africa on the Move, Thomas Mandelmeyer. And now let's hear a report about this teenage South African girl that Thomas was talking about. Happiness Matanji presents this report written by Stefan Moll.
With almost 36 murders per 100,000 residents annually, Port Elizabeth is seen as the second most violent city in South Africa. Although the situation has slightly improved over the past few years, the recent wave of xenophobic attacks in South Africa is a distressing reminder that the high level of violence is a major obstacle for the country's development. Denied the chance to grow up with a positive vision of the future and see themselves as the productive within their communities, young people in a township such as Woma, a township in Port Elizabeth, are often driven into a cycle of violence and criminality. This violence claimed one of her friends, And once a week, the schoolgirl visits the grave of her friend Cindy, who was brutally raped and murdered 2 years ago.
It's a feeling of mixed emotions because now it's my first time here after the burial. I was last year at the burial. Back then, we were still in shock because we didn't expect it. I think now it has sunk in that we may never see Cindy again. Maybe we'll see her in the afterlife.
Living in Woma is a challenging because of the high poverty levels and unemployment. Young people find themselves not only the victims, but also the perpetrators of violence.
Because most of them work in gangs, so if you want to fit in, you go into this gang and then you do all sorts of wrong stuff because you just want to fit in. And then, of course, unemployment also has a major role to play and poverty.
Sanelisiwe Dick wants young people to take responsibility and take action for a healthy environment, such as renovating a rundown classroom. With such positive contribution, their next move is to visit the mayor of Nelson Bay Municipality, Dan Jordan. While there, the group present their proposals for a safer city to the mayor.
Now, the first issue was that not everyone contributes in the creation of safer spaces. People feel that it's the job of the government or the police, whereas it's a shared responsibility.
After laying out their plans, the mayor was impressed.
I'm very encouraged, both by their own stories of what they want to pursue in future, as well as the kind of society and communities that they want to see in the metro.
Together with her friends and Masifunde, she will make sure that young people have their say about the future of Nelson Mandela Bay.
And that report was written by Stefan Mühl. And still on the subject of fighting violence, let's now head to Uganda. Gay rights activist Kasha Nabagesera recently won this year's Right Livelihood Award. She was awarded the prize for her courage and commitment to speak out against hatred and violence on the Ugandan gay community. Greet Hoffman met her before she won the award, and his report is presented by Eunice Wanjiru.
Everyone recognizes her face. That is why she has to hide. Kasha Nabagesera had even appeared on national television in her dauntless campaign for gay and lesbian rights in Uganda.
I've gotten beaten so many times. I can't count how many times I've been beaten. People have come out openly on social media and saying if they get hold of me, they're going to cut off my head, they're going to put tracks on my body and all this. So I have to really, really always watch my back.
The 36-year-old can hardly leave the house nowadays. But to her, there is also a positive side to all the threats. People can no longer deny the existence of gays and lesbians in Uganda.
I live here with my partner and my cousin brother and his partner. So it's a gay house.
It's probably the only gay house in Kampala?
No. Oh, we have so many people who are living together secretly. Some pretend to be best friends, and others pretend to be actually married. So yes, we have you're in the pink village of Uganda.
Uganda's gay community is said to be 500,000 strong, but the figure could well be higher. The country's gay rights activists are taking considerable risks to change people's attitudes. They have organized an annual parade, which is already in its fourth year. They are publishing a magazine called Bombastic to share what it's like being gay in Uganda and to reach out to the people that are hostile to them. Kasha Nabagesera is a co-founder and editor. The activists are getting help and recognition from abroad, but at home, they are being harassed and intimidated by the media, the very organizations they depend on to speak up for them.
These are the people we live with. These are people who are pelting stones to us. These are the people who are pointing fingers. These are people who are sexually abusing us, who are beating us. So we need them to report positively so that we can minimize these risks.
In 2014, the Ugandan government wanted to introduce harsh prison sentences for homosexuality. Under international pressure, the legislation was repealed. In the population, there's a mix of ignorance, reservations, and apprehension. Kasha Nabagesera says more and more people in the country are coming out, defying threats of new, more repressive laws.
I'm really, really hopeful for the movement in Uganda because even when others go, others come on board. So there is hope. There is no doubt. There is hope, and the movement is strong. The movement exists, and the challenges are there, but we also register some successes that keep us going.
She is intent on continuing to travel all over Africa as an ambassador for a new self-confidence within the gay and lesbian movement.
That report was written by Greet Hoffman. Brahms, Handel, or Bach? These famous European musicians were almost entirely unknown in poverty-stricken areas of Kenya's capital, Nairobi. And their music, classical music, of course, too. But a six-year-old program called Ghetto Classics has changed that. It has not only introduced a new kind of music here, but has also shown around 300 young people an alternative way out of the cycle of crime, drugs and poverty. Dominique von Eisenhardt-Rothe has visited the project and his report is now presented by Daniel Pelz.
Young African youth playing modern musical instruments is nothing new. But black youth, deeply engrossed in classical music, the likes of Brahms, Handel or Bach, is simply amazing. Even more astonishing is that this happens right in the middle of Korogocho, a slum in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. This is what the group Ghetto Classics does. Selina Kumu is a member of the group. She and her fellow musicians can transform any song into classical music. But Ghetto Classics is more than just a unique orchestra.
Ghetto Classics is my second family. We all stay here like brothers and sisters. So maybe if I'm bored at home and I want to relax and have fun, I just come here.
It's tough to grow up in Korogocho. And the worst part is the stigma attached to it. Celine and her fellow musicians have discovered a way to earn dignity and respect.
Sometimes how people talk, yeah, you know, maybe you're from the slums, so you can't do anything. So you find it like it's eating me inside. Yeah, so that's the thing that I want to change.
The 18-year-old still lives with her family in Korogocho. At the orchestra, she doesn't get paid, but by teaching music lessons, she already earns up to 45 euros a month. This makes her independent. But all this couldn't have happened without Elizabeth Njoroge, the founder of Ghetto Classics. She recalls the early stages of initiating the group.
When we first started, everyone thought we were crazy. What's this classical music nonsense, you know, as opposed to genge or, you know, hip hop or something cool and groovy. And so the kids, I remember our first concert here, we did some excerpts from Handel's Messiah. And we were like, we could have landed from Mars.
But the idea soon took off after funding from the Kenyan Art of Music Foundation came through.
I don't think that all the kids who are in our program will necessarily be first-class musicians. But somebody like Celine, for instance, she is extremely talented. And actually, I feel it's a shame that Celine didn't come into our program when she was much younger, because perhaps if we had met her when she was 8 or 9, who knows what could have come out of this.
And as for Selina Kumu, Ghetto Classics remains a lot more than just a job opportunity.
Music has enabled me to realize myself and know who I am and what I want in future. It has made me travel a lot and meet different people. So I think music has opened my eyes to see and to know what I want.
Selina has become a role model for others here. Discipline and teamwork are essential for any career. And there is hardly a better way to learn that in Korogocho than through Ghetto Classics Orchestra.
And that report was compiled by Dominique von Eisenhardt-Rothe. And that's how we end this Africa Link Christmas edition. For more stories on people making a positive impact across the continent, visit our website dw.com/Africa on the Move. From Bonn, Germany, I'm Crispin Mwakideo, wishing you a Merry Christmas wherever you may be in Africa.